Good morning. Today's off in Erevin Pei Vav. We're in the Mishnah Pei Hemet Beis. We're here in the 8th parak of Maseches Erevin. And we are going over some of the more basic halachas regarding Erevin. We're going to be weaving in and out of Eruvei Tchumim and Eruvei Chatzeros. Our Mishnah is going to be discussing Eruvei Chatzeros together with Shitufei Mavos. And we're going to establish something very basic here in this Mishnah, and that is where exactly is the placement of the Eruv, for the Eruv to allow carrying within a Chatzer. So to people can carry from their homes into the chatzer and back from the chatzer back into their homes. So an Erev has to be established. We've been discussing it now for just about 85 days. So where exactly we're going to put the Erev? Now, hopefully at this point in time, we know the answer. We've heard already a number of times, but this is the Mishnah. The Mishnah here is going to identify exactly where the Erev needs to go. And for that matter, in the course of the Gemara's discussion, we're also going to be discussing where the Shituf should go as well. When I'm making a Shituf Mavui, so that people can carry from the Chatzner into the Mavui, into a shared Mavui, so that too, where exactly do I place the Shituf, which we've been discussing at length here in this parak as well. So where does that go? So that also is going to be discussed on our Mishnah. We begin the Mishnah. Hanosein es eruvo. So let's say you put your Eruv in. Now the Mishnah assumes over here that we know already that you're going to be putting it in a house. And what the Mishnah is going to teach us is that it has to be a residential home. So Hanosein es eruvo bebe sharach sadro merpeses en eruv. So if I put it in a Beisha'ar, Beisha'ar is some sort of gatehouse, Achsajra, some sort of pavilion, and a Mirpesis, a balcony, ain't no Erev, that's not going to be a good Erev. These are not residential areas. They are homes, they are enclosures, but they're not designed for residents, and as a result of that, that is not going to be a successful location for the Erev. V'adar sham ain't no oser alav. And let's say you decide to live there, so that doesn't change the status, meaning that these are not going to be considered residential places, and so therefore they don't impact the status of the chatzer. If let's say I have storage houses, storing grain or animals or wood or other types of storage houses, so that in fact would be an eruv. Now, even though storage houses aren't exactly residential places, but nevertheless that is something that is more convertible to a residential place than the aforementioned items of the Mishnah. And therefore, the Mishnah tells us that if I put my Eruv in any one of these storage houses, so that is going to be a good Eruv. V'adar sham oser. And if you live there, so that's going to impact the status of the Chatzer, meaning that you need to be a contributor towards the Eruv. And Rav Yehuda Amar Miesham Tfisas Yashal Balabai Sein Oser. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that if you're renting out space, but the landlord, the owner of the home still has tfisas yad, still has a hold in this house, so then it still is considered the owner's, and assuming that he already made a contribution to the Eruv, so then everything will be fine, the chatzer will be fine. This idea of tfisas yad is going to be discussed in more detail in the Gemara as we get to the bottom of the Amud, so we're going to reserve, we'll wait till the bottom of the Amud in order to discuss this idea of tfisas yad. In the meantime, however, we're just going to clarify the first part of the Mishnah. I'm Rav Yehuda Bered, Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, Kol Makom Sh'amru Hadar Sham Eino Oser. So, we're going to discuss the following correlation. If we're talking about a place where by living there does not create restriction, meaning you are not going to make it a residential home, even if you decide to live there, you're not going to make it a residential home. So, I know that Es Eruva Eino Eruv. So then correlating with that is going to be the idea that if I try to put my Eruv there in that same place, in said place, so then it's not going to be a good Eruv. Chutz mi beishar diyachid, with exception to the beishar viyachid, if it's a guardhouse, but not a public guardhouse, but a private guardhouse. V'chol makum shamer chachamim ein menichim bo eruv. So, and anywhere where the chachamim said you can't put an eruv, meaning if a place is disqualified for an eruv because it's non-residential, menichim bo shituf, where you are allowed to put in the shituf. Chutz mi avir mavui, with exception to the airspace of the mavui, meaning you can't put the shituf mavui in the mavui. It's got to be in a chatzer within the mavui, but not the mavui itself. So, my kamachshalam tanina. So the Gemara says, okay, very good. That was the statement that was made by Rav Yehuda Bereider of Shmuel. The Gemara says, when all said and done, was there a chiddush that he taught us? We learned in the Mishnah. Ano sinas eruva bebe sharach sadro merpesas eino eruv. So let's just read the Mishnah. Let's read the Mishnah carefully. Mishnah taught us that if I put my eruv in any one of these non-residential places, a guardhouse, an achsadra, a mirpesis, the pavilion, the balcony, it's not going to be a good eruv. Eruv hud lo havi shituf havi. So the Gemara says, now, critical reading would tell us that these places are disqualified for the eruv, but they're fine for the shituf. The shituf can go in those areas. That's what a simple diuk of the Mishnah would produce. And so now, with all said and done, Rav Yehuda so far has not given us any new information. Everything can be deducted from the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, well, there is a detail that Rav Yehuda taught us that was not in the Mishnah, which is Beishar D'Yachid. V'avid D'mavu Yitzterichlei. Actually, there are two points that he mentioned that are not deducted from the Mishnah. One, Beishar D'Yachid. If let's say it's a guardhouse, but it's not the public guardhouse. It happens to be one individual's private guardhouse, so that is considered a residential area. Also, the airspace of the Mavi, which is disqualified for the Shituf, that also was not clearly articulated in the Mishnah. So, Itzirich Le Delo Tanan, Tainami Hachi, the Gemara says, okay, good. So, fine. So, there are Chidushim by Rav Yehuda, and now the Gemara is going to support this with Braises. Hanosin is Eruva, Bebe Sharach, Sadra, Merpesas, Uvechasra, Vamavi, Arize Eruv. If you put your Eruv in the Beishar, the Achsadra, Merpesas, or in the Chatzir, or in the Mavui, it's considered a good Eruv. So many problematic statements with that braisa. So v'hatanan ein ze eruv. So the first problematic issue is that it just goes right up against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says it's not going to be a successful eruv if I put in these non-residential homes. So what is this braisa talking about? Ema harei ze shituf. So the Gemara says, fine, so we're going to have to re-understand the braisa. The braisa says, harei ze eruv, we're going to correct it to mean harei ze shituf, meaning the braisa is not talking about the eruv chatzeros. It's talking about the Shituf Mavui. Shituf Mavui can be put in these homes, these non-residential homes. It would be no worse than putting it in the Chatzir itself. The Shituf Mavui is placed in the Chatzir, so these non-residential homes at least qualify as a Chatzir. So the Gemara says, that's great, but Shituf B'Mavui Laminter. Now, reread the Brice again. The Brice says that what's an acceptable place to put the Shituf? Put it in the Mavui. Put it in the Mavui? No. That's the only place that you're not allowed to put the Shituf. You can put the Shituf in the Chatzir. You can't put it in the Mavui. So, Ema b'chatzir shema Mavui. So the Gemara says, okay, that also needs new understanding. And what the Braisa meant is that you're going to be putting it within a Chatzir of this Mavui. Okay. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Gemara tells us another halacha that we were already treated to earlier in the Masechta. But obviously, it's related to our discussion over here. B'nei chabur shayu mesubin. V'kiddush aleihem hayom. So let's say you have a group of people who are eating on Friday afternoon. Okay, we already noted when we saw this the first time, just about 2 weeks ago in the daf. So yes, it's strange that you have a group of people who are going out of their way to have a meal on Friday afternoon. Okay, the first sugya in the Gemara Pesachim, in the 10th parak of Pesachim, discusses such similar situations as well. But in general, obviously, it is not advisable to start eating on a Friday afternoon. You do want to have an appetite for Friday night, but regardless, the Bryce over here is discussing where this B'nai Chabura are sitting down and having a meal on Friday afternoon, and Kiddush Aleihem Hayom, and it's going to become Shabbos, meaning soon enough, it's going to be Shabbos. It does not mean over here that it actually became Shabbos, because once it becomes Shabbos, it's too late to set up an Eruv. Eruv can only be set up before Shabbos, so it means that Shabbos is oncoming. So, Pasha al-Shulchan Somchin, Aleihem Mishum Eruv. So, Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel's quote is saying, so now you want to make an Eruv. So what you could do is, look, we're having a meal right now. There's bread on the table, so you can assign this bread as your Eruv. That's going to be your Eruv bread for the Shabbos. Now, in another version of this halachic statement made by Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, it's the bread could be serving as a Shituf. And I'm Rabba Vlo Pligi. Now, Rabba says, there's no discrepancy over here, meaning both statements can ring true. Kan b'mesubin b'bayis, kan b'mesubin b'chatzir. Depends where they're having their meal. If they're having the meal in the house. So as we just learned in our Mishnah, the house is the location to set up your Eruv Chatzir. It's good. Under those circumstances, this will be my Eruv for the Chatzir. If, however, let's say they're having a meal outside in the Chatzir. So now, as we know, the Chatzir is not the place to put down your Eruv. It's the place to put down your Shituf Mavui. Perfect. So that's what if they're having the meal outside, so then it's going to be serving as a Shituf. So Amalei Abai LaRava Tain DeMesayelach. So Abai says to Rava, good, and I'm going to have a Braisa, and the Braisa is going to be supportive of this as well. Eruv Chatzir is bechatzir. So the Eruv Chatzir is going to Chatzir, and Shituf Mavoi is b'Mavoi, and the Shituf Mavoi goes in the Mavoi. Now this Braisa, it's difficult. V'avinam by Eruv Chatzir is bechatzir v'atanan. No saying es Eruvo bebayis. I'm sorry, bebe shar achsadrim repesus eno Eruv. So already, now we're going over our Mishnah again, but it's becoming clear in the Mishnah, as we go through it again and again, that the operative place to put down your Eruv Chatzeres is not in the Chatzer, or not in a non-residential home in the Chatzer, meaning it's got to go in a house. So the Gemara says, fine. So Eima Iruv Chatzeros Bebayis Shebechatzer. So the Gemara says, good. So proper understanding is that the Eiruv Chatzeros has to go in a house within the Chatzer. And Shitufa Mavos Bechatzer Shebemavoi. And as long as we are refining our understanding of the first part, so we're going to refine our understanding of the second part as well. Where does the Shitufa of Mavoi go? So the Braisa says Mavoi, but now we know it doesn't mean Mavoi. It means in a Chatzer within the Mavoi. Good. Adkan, that takes us to the first part of the Gemara in establishing where exactly the Erev needs to go. Answer, residential home within the Chatzir. Also, where does the Shituf need to go? Chatzir within the Mavui. Good. We continue in the Gemara. Rebbe Yehuda Omrei Mish Sham Tfisas Yad V'chulei. Okay, so if you're renting a home out, so whose responsibility is it now to contribute to the Erev? So it's going to be the renter. The renter now is the is for the intents and purposes of Shabbos and the requirement of making an Eruv, it's the renter's obligation to contribute to the Eruv. That we understand. The Mishnah, Rav Yehuda, however, in the Mishnah tells us a chiddush, which is that if you are a renter and you have the rights to the residence, however, the owner of the home still has a tfisas yad in the property, so that will obviate the need for you to go ahead and make a contribution, meaning we could still view this as the owner's property vis-a-vis the halachas of Erevin. So, this idea where the owner has a tfisas yad, so obviously that needs clarification. What does that mean, that the owner has a tfisas yad? Literally, it means he still has some sort of holdings in the house. But that's unclear, that's not specific. And so, the Gemara's discussion now is going to revolve around, what does that mean? That the owner still has a holding in the house, he still has a tfisas yad, which thereby is going to obviate your need, you the renter, to go ahead and contribute to the Erev. So, Rabbi Yehuda Omrei Mirsham tfisas yad v'chulei heichidami tfisas yad. So from here until the Mishnah coming up on Pei Vav Amud Aleph, so the question and the discussion is going to revolve around a simple one: what is the definition of tfisas yad? Kegon chaser shel bunyas ben bunyas. So the Gemara over here gives us a case study. That of Bunyas ben Bunyas. Yes, it's a strange name. It sounds like he was named after his father. Okay, not exactly our practice, but notwithstanding. So Asla Kamed de Rebbe. So he comes in front of Rebbe. So we're going to be discussing Bunyas ben Bunyas, where it's going to be clear in the Gemara, and Rashi gives it away. Rashi, two lines from the bottom, that he was very wealthy. And what he would do is that he would rent out houses. Rashi writes he would lend out houses. But anyway, but even as he would lend out houses, he would still retain some of his possessions in the house, which is why we're bringing it down over here, because this is going to be a case study of Tfisas Yad. In the meantime, we're going to just, let's go through the story in the Gemara. So Asa come to Rebbe, so they go in front of Rebbe. Amar lehu pnu malkum leven mea mane. So Rebbe gave him kavod because he had a certain net worth. Okay, to be mechabed people just because they have money, so is a time tradition practice. And obviously we know where our values lie and what's important and what's not that important. But nevertheless, as we're going to see, it's going to become clear, Rebbe did spend time honoring people that were wealthy. The Gemara is going to explain a little bit in a little bit why that is in fact the case. But anyway, I'll say in a shachrina amar lehu, another person comes in and says, Penu makom leven masayim mana. He was undervalued. It was not 100 mana, but rather it was worth 200 mana. So amar lefan Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Aviv Shalze Yeshlo Elef Sfinos Biyam, Uchenegdem Elef Ayaros Biyabasha. And now, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi goes over to Rabbi and says, look, as far as valuations are concerned, so you talk about his father, meaning presumably over here they were talking about the son up until now. But nevertheless, now let's talk about his father. His father had 1,000 boats and a thousand cities or small developments. Whatever the case was, his father was exceedingly wealthy. Amar lo lechishetagi etz aviv. Amar lo. So Rebbe says, good. So you know what? Let me deliver a message to the father. Meaning, if you don't mind, now that I know that not only is this guy wealthy, but his father is exceedingly wealthy, so if you could please hand deliver a message from me to the father, and that is, Emalo al tishagreo bekelim halal ufanai. Next time he comes to me, he shouldn't be dressed the way he is. Apparently, this person, when he came to Rebbe, so he was dressed, but not very well. Right? Regular clothing, if you will. Okay, he shopped at Marshall's. So, but the, he says, but the, do me a favor. Next time, tell the father that people of that kind of wealth, so they should dress better. Okay, now, Rabbi Mechaber Ashirim, Rabbi Kiva Mechaber Ashirim. What has become abundantly clear in the story is that Rabbi honors people with wealth, and Rabbi Kiva also did the same thing as well. Kedarsh Rava Bar Mari. Now, over here, it wasn't just a pragmatic issue. Okay, understood. In our world, in my, right, money does help operate things, and so it is a pragmatic issue. Fine. So, and that in of itself is fine. But on top of that, it's more than just a pragmatic issue. It was a religious issue. The pasuk in Tehillim says, "Yeshiv Olam Lefnei Elokim Chesed VeEmes Man Yinsaruhu." So the pasuk in Tehillim describes how HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides both Chesed and Emes Man Yinsaruhu. The word over here, Man, Rashi describes it as a function of the word Mizonos, right, like Man from heaven. So money will be protected for an individual, meaning that if you see somebody wealthy, it means that he has certain zechuyos that helped him accumulate his wealth. Okay, if he accumulated his wealth illegally, so then it's not the zechuyos that helped him accumulate the wealth; it's the illegal means and practices. But if you see a person who's successful in business and did so honestly, so the reason why he got there is because of various zechuyos that he had. So the Gemara is now explaining is that Rebbe and Rebbe Kiva would honor these people because their wealth is really a siman, it's a sign, it's an indication that they had certain zechuyos that demand that kind of honor. Okay. Amosai, and the Gemara goes and explains, the pasuk Amosai Yeshiv Olam Lifnei Elokim, when is a person going to be Lifnei Elokim? It's man shechesiv emes man yitzur. When you see that person has accumulated a certain amount in this world, so it means that he has a certain zechuyos that present itself in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and thereby he is worth honoring. Now, all this is a long answer to a short question. The short question was, what is considered Tfisas Yad? And then we got involved in Bunyas and Bunyas ben Bunyas, and the son was wealthy, the father was even wealthier, and Rebbe delivered a message to the father, your son's not dressing appropriately. Okay, all that took us aside from answering the question, which was, what is Tfisas Yad? And so the Gemara's answer was just, take a look at Bunyas ben Bunyas. Okay, it's funny, after all, when all said and done, the Gemara does not specify exactly what it was that he did with his homes that he rented out to others, in terms of still giving him the status of having a Tfisas Yad. The Gemara does not articulate. Okay, so it's admittedly just a little bit strange. Rashi, go back to the bottom of the previous Amud, Bunyas ben Bunyas, Rashi writes, We already read some of this Rashi. Asher hayu mashal batim shebechatzal lechem hayu lo kelim bekulan. So Rashi over here just simply describes that this bunyas ben bunyas, so he retained some of his, let's call it furniture, in the houses that he rented out. Shemitoch ishu oshro hayu lo kelim harbe. Now it just happens to be that he was particularly wealthy, and he had a lot of kelim, and so as a result of that, so in the homes that he rented out, he still had some of his kelim in those homes. Good. So the most that we got out of this whole story, vis-a-vis the halachas of Tfisas Yad, is that as long as there are still furniture of the owner in the home, so that's considered Tfisas Yad. Okay. This idea impacts a lot. In other words, when you're renting out a home, right? On Airbnb or whatever the case is. So obviously the owner, it's all the owner's furniture. So that's considered Tfisas Yad. Okay, so and that means that vis-a-vis the halachas of Erevin, so that means that you're not the one obligated or responsible to contribute to the Erev, it's the owner. Could very well be that hotels as well. Okay, hotels is a lengthy discussion, and the conclusion is not clear regarding a hotel. So obviously the furniture is not yours. Obviously the furniture belongs to the owner, but in the case of a hotel, though, obviously the whole purpose and the whole reason of the furniture is for you, the renter, meaning that the owner didn't keep the furniture over there just simply as a storage facility for his possessions. Meaning the Rashi that we saw together, the impression you get of Tfisas Yad is that the owner right now has just got so many things, he just needs a place to store it. So one of his homes that he rents out, he stores it over there, not for the renter, but just simply because I need a place to store my things. That's the impression you got. Like unlike a hotel, where there, the furniture in that room is for you. It's not for the owner. He meant to put it in there for you to use. Okay, so, right, just basic distinctions between the case in our Gemara versus, you know, a hotel which may not file under the category of Tfisas Yad. Anyway, a couple more opinions regarding Tfisas Yad. We continue in the Gemara, Pei Vav Amud Aleph, about 10 lines from the top. Rava Bar Bachana Amar Kagon, Yasei Shal Machareisha. He says, I'll give you another example, Tfisas Yad, Yasei Shal Machareisha. Okay, the plow, the peg that goes into the plow. If you remember, we go back to Masechta Shabbos, we talked about Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis, things that are so significant and important that they will have the status of Muktzah, and you can't move them under any circumstance. Not for Tzorach Mekamo, not for Tzorach Gufo. You can't move them under any circumstances. And one of the classic examples that's given is Yasei Shal Machareisha, that is Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis. It's a really valuable item. And you only use it for a specific purpose, right? The sakin of the mole falls under this category as well. Anyway, that is considered tfisas yad. Now, why is that considered tfisas yad? Because, for sure, over the duration of Shabbos, nobody is moving it. It's muktzah. And so therefore, and it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to somebody else. It belongs to the owner. That's an example of tfisas yad. Am Rav Nachman, Tanda Bei Shmuel, Davar Anita B'Shabbos Oser. So something which is moved on Shabbos, Rashi, something which is moved on Shabbos, eino tfisas yad, v'oser, so that's not going to be considered tfisas yad, and now you, the renter, are going to create restrictions. Because since it's now something that you can move, so as a renter, you rent out the space, it's understood that right now usage of that home is yours, so if it's something which is a non-mux item, you just simply toss it outside. However, if it's davar she'eino nitzal b'Shabbos, if it's something which you cannot move, so eino oser. So you, the renter, do not create restrictions because now there's something of the owner that is in the house and will be in the house for the remainder of Shabbos, for the balance of Shabbos. So therefore, you, the renter, do not create restrictions. Otherwise known as tfisas yad. Tanya mehachi, the Gemara has a brisa supporting this idea. Yesh lo tevel, yesh lo shashis, v'chol davar she'eino nitzal b'Shabbos, eino oser. So let's say there's tevel in the house, right, untithed produce, which time and again we describe as being muksa. We just had this a couple days ago in the daf. And ashashis, bars of metal, right, totally have no function to it whatsoever. So these are items of muksa. These are classic examples. And as such, if this belongs to the owner of the house, so that's considered tfisas yad. And you, the renter of the house, do not create a restriction for the members of the chatzar. Because the owner of the home... you still have a holding in this house. And so therefore, this is an example of tfisas yad. Okay, adkan. All right, so to the question the Gemara asked on the bottom of the previous summit, what exactly is tfisas yad? So we got multiple answers to that question. Something that the owner has still kept in the house, like storage, the way Rashi described it. Muksa items, which you simply cannot move. Okay, examples of tfisas yad are the positions... necessarily arguing with one another, unclear in the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't pit these definitions one against the other. It could be that there are multiple definitions to what tfisas yad is. We continue in the Mishnah. We're in the Mishnah on Pei Vav and Aleph. There are two Mishnahs over here with the first Mishnah. So let's say you leave your home for Shabbos and you go to another city on Shabbos. So Yisrael Hareza Oser Divrei Bimeir. So our mayor says that an unoccupied home, vis-a-vis the halachas of Erevin, still is going to create restriction. Even though your house for that Shabbos is unoccupied, you're not coming back that Shabbos. Nevertheless, Lafishitas Reb Meir, so that's going to create restriction, that's going to create Isser. And that is Shitas Reb Meir that we've seen already a number of times in our Mesechta, but here's the Mishnah. So the Mishnah over here clearly articulates Reb Meir Shita that unoccupied home still needs to be accounted for. So the owner, before leaving for that Shabbos, so what he has to do is he has to make a contribution to the Eruv. Otherwise, the Chatzar is going to be restricted. Rav Yehuda Omer, and Rav Meir does not make a differentiation between Jew and non-Jew. Already that foreshadows, it tells us that there's going to be a Tana coming up that makes a differentiation that's coming up in just a moment. Rav Yehuda Omer, Eino Oser, Rav Yehuda says it does not create Isser altogether, meaning Rav Yehuda is diametrically opposed to Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda is of the position that an unoccupied home does not create restriction. Rav Yossi Omer, Nach Yoser Yisrael Eino Oser, She'ein Derech Yisrael Avo B'Shabbos. And it is Rav Yossi who makes a split decision between Jew and non-Jew, and he explains the difference. When it comes to a Jew, when he leaves for Shabbos, so he's not coming back on Shabbos. And presumably the reason why is because of Tchum Shabbos. because once he goes away for Shabbos, he will be prohibited from coming back on Shabbos because he's going to be bound by his tchum, so he can't come back on Shabbos. So therefore, we know that this home is unoccupied and will remain unoccupied for the remainder of Shabbos. On the other hand, a non-Jew who has no restrictions of tchum, so even though he went away for Shabbos, so there's a good chance that he's going to come back on Shabbos itself. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu hiniach beisav v'alach l'shbos etzel bito ba'oso ha'ir, eino oso shekvar hisiya milibo. And Rabbi Shimon over here takes a very lenient position, notably that even if he were to leave his home and go to his daughter, who lives in the very same city, so that means to say that he went to his daughter for Shabbos, but it's not at a distance. His daughter happens to live in the same town. So that is still, says Rabbi Shimon, considered like you left your house for Shabbos. Eino oser shekvar hisiyah milibo. Hisiyah milibo, Rashi says, is the same thing as saying hisiyach dato, meaning that this is you leaving your home. And so therefore it remains an unoccupied home for the remainder of Shabbos. And so therefore that house does not create restriction. Good. So in our Mishnah, four opinions in terms of the status of an unoccupied home. Reb Meir says it has the status of a residential home under all circumstances, even when unoccupied. Makes no difference, Jew or non-Jew. Reb Yehuda says it never creates restriction, both for Jew and non-Jew. Reb Yossi makes a distinction between Jew and non-Jew. Jew is not going to come back on Shabbos, presumably because of Tchum, and non-Jew will come back on Shabbos. And finally, the Shita Rabbi Shimon is that even if a person goes to his daughter's, plans on spending the Shabbos at his daughter's, who lives in the same town, that still is going to have the status of being his home is still going to be considered an unoccupied home, thereby not requiring to make a contribution for that Shabbos. Amarev halacha ke Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara immediately jumps to the halacha, and Rav is quoted here saying the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon. V'dafka bito, but that's only if he's going to be spending Shabbos by his daughter, Ava Benolo, but not if he's spending Shabbos by his son. So that means to say that a person will expect to have a pleasant Shabbos if he goes and spends the Shabbos with his daughter and his son-in-law. On the other hand, if he goes and spends the Shabbos by his son and daughter-in-law, Gemara says it. So don't expect to have the greatest Shabbos in the world. You know what people say? Navach bas kaba. Navach bas guryusa poke. So if you're being barked by a male dog, I'll just explain the expression literally, and then we'll plug it into our discussion. If you get barked by a male dog, so that means to say it's fine. You could still come in. Don't worry. The bark is going to be worse than its bite. Cliche, but fits in well with today's daf. However, Navach Bas Goryasa, but a female dog barks that you poke, that's a great time to leave. And now that's the aphorism, that's the expression. And now plugging in into our discussion over here, the male dog over here is your son-in-law. Meaning, let's say you're right, you go to your daughter's for Shabbos, your son-in-law, whatever, is upset with you, he barks a little bit, don't worry, right? His bark is a lot worse than his bite. In other words, your daughter is going to make peace with everybody, right? Your daughter likes you, she likes her husband, so it'll be good. It'll be just fine. On the other hand, if you're being barked at not by your son-in-law, by your daughter-in-law, so that's it, right? That is a direct invitation to leave, and the Gemara advises that's a pretty good move. Now's a good time to leave. Probably over here, there's not going to your son, despite the fact that he certainly sympathizes with you, but is not going to be successful in terms of assuaging his wife, who currently right now is unhappy with you. Okay, good general life advice of the Gemara. In the meantime, Rav Paschal's like Rabbi Shimon, that if you go to your daughter's for Shabbos, so that is considered vis-a-vis your home as an unoccupied house, and there's no requirement to make a contribution. And the Gemara's life advice of this is only true by daughter, not by daughter-in-law. So let's say you have a pit. And this pit centers itself between two chatzeros. And these two chatzeros under discussion are un-eruved. So in other words, each one of the chatzeros made their own independent eruv, but they do not have a joint eruv between them. And presumably there is no Pesach between the two chatzeros, but even if there is, and they didn't make an eruv, it's going to be the same discussion. So Bor Shemein Shei Chatzeros, Ein Memalin Heimena B'Shabbos. So you cannot fill up from that pit on Shabbos. The pit obviously is a water source. And now the two sides of the pit now are extending to the two sides of the chatzeros. And the Mishnah is telling us that under most circumstances now, you can't draw water from this pit. Elim kein asula mechitza gavar sar tfachim. Bein malamata bein mitoch ogno. So, unless there's a wall, and the wall is going to be a good wall, whether it's lamata below, or mitoch ogno, or within the rim. Now, where this wall is going to be specifically is going to be a big part of the discussion in the Gemara. So let's wait for a moment for the Gemara to clarify exactly what the Mishnah meant by that. But what the Mishnah is certainly telling us is that if all I have is just a wall going over the pit, which of course we do because these two chatzeros are divided and the division is created by the wall, if all I have is just a wall going over the pit, that's not enough. You need another wall in addition to that. Where that wall, where the placement of that wall is going to be, so we're going to clarify in the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says the actual placement of the wall is subject to a debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says it has to be below, and Beis Hillel says it can even be above. Okay, now, again, we're going to wait till the Gemara, because the Gemara is going to really help us clarify what exactly Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel mean. And finally, Amar Rav Yehuda lo tehei mechisa gedola min hakosel shebineihem. And Rav Yehuda says, I don't understand what the need is for an additional wall, meaning you have a wall, the wall that rides over the pit. So Rav Yehuda says that's going to be just fine, not only for separating the chatzers, but separating the pit as well, and the water within the pit. Rav Yehuda is obviously being a makel over here. He's simply saying that the wall that exists over the pit, so that's going to be good enough so that each member of each of the chatzers can draw from their side of the water. Okay, so in our mission over here, a discussion regarding a pit that sits between two chatzeros, the water and the ability of each of the members of the chatzeros to draw from that pit. In our Mishnah, except with exception to Rabbi Yehuda Shita, you need an additional wall to create separation. That additional wall is certainly going to go somewhere in the pit. The discussion now is going to be where in the pit we're talking. So I'm sorry, and before we start with the Gemara, so we know that according to Rabbi Gamliel, so Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue exactly where the wall should go in the pit. And the only thing we know we could say right now for sure is that Beis Shammai requires the wall to be somewhat lower and Beis Hillel requires the wall to be somewhat higher. And so the discussion to be had right now is what is a good understanding, what is the correct understanding of the shitas of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So I'm Rav Huna. So now the Amoraim are going to discuss and frankly debate what exactly are Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai's Lamata and Lamala. I'll do it in the correct order. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel's, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel's Lamata and Lamala. Okay, so I'm Rav Huna. Lamata, Lamata, Mamish, Lamala, Lamala, Mamish. Vizeh, Vizeh, Babor. So Rav Huna says, I'll tell you where Lamata is, I'll tell you where Lamala is. It means in the pit, but that means to say in the pit above the water. Meaning, let's do the following. Let's divide our pit into sections. In other words, the pit obviously is no better way to describe it. It's a ditch in the ground. But the water, let's not put the water all the way up to the ground level. Let's put the water somewhere in the midway point. Fine. And now, in order for the members of the chatzer to be able to draw from the pit, so there has to be a wall somewhere in the pit itself. Okay. So the way Rav Huna understands it is that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are both saying that the wall has to be in the pit. According to Shita Beis Shammai, it has to be where it goes actually to the surface area of the water. It actually has to hit the water. That's the lamata of Beis Shammai. Mashenkin, according to Beis Hillel, no. As long as it's somewhere in the interior of the pit, it could be right below the ground level, and it could hover well above the surface area of the water. That's going to be successful. That'll be good enough to divide the waters. That's the Lamala of the Shita of Beis Hillel. Good. That is Rav Huna's understanding. So according to Rav Huna, the wall's going to go in the pit, but it doesn't actually have to go into the water. It just simply has to be somewhere above the water. Where above the water? Machlokas, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. That's all according to Rav Huna. Rav Yehuda Amar Lamata Lamata Minayam Lamala Lamala Minayam. And Rav Yehuda says, no. That lamata lamala means above or below the surface area of the water. Beis Shammai demands that the wall has to be submerged in the water. And Beis Hillel says, no, it doesn't have to be submerged in the water. It does have to hit the top of the surface area of the water, but that's it. It doesn't have to go into the water. Okay, so, And Rashi over here makes the observation, meaning if you want to think you have good understanding of the Gemara over here, so Rashi says that the Rav Yehuda, where's the Rashi? Here it is, right alongside where we are in the Gemara. Rashi says that the Mala of Rav Yehuda is going to be equivalent to the Mata of Rav Huna. Okay. Meaning Rav Huna's Beis Shammai is the same as Beis Hillel's Rav Yehuda, or Rav Yehuda's Beis Hillel. Okay, if you're seeing it well, that made perfect sense. Okay, now, Amalei Rava b'Rav Chanan l'Abaye Hadam Rav Yehuda l'mata l'mata min amayim. So the Gemara now wants understanding, meaning we have all the positions laid out, but at this point in time we don't have understanding, and the Gemara wants to seek understanding. So this idea of Rav Yehuda, that l'mata l'mata min amayim, meaning that is Rav Yehuda, and within Shitas Beis Shammai, the wall has to be underneath the water, meaning that the top of the wall has to be at the surface area of the water, and the wall has to be submerged. But the Gemara says, I don't understand. Maishan lamata mamish, de arive maya. Lamata menamayim nami, harive maya. So the Gemara says, I'm not fully following, because according to Beis Shammai, if the purpose of the wall is to make sure that there is no communication between one side of the wall and the other side of the wall, or specifically the water on one side of the wall and the water on the other side of the wall, so just because the wall is now slightly submerged in the water, so what? Below the wall, there's still going to be transference of water from one side to the other. So Amar Lei, Lo Shmi Allah, Adam Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Umata Ma Mishum Rabbi Chia, Tzarech Shiyur Roshin, Shalkanim Lamala Min Hamayim Tefach. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you didn't fully understand. Meaning, according to Shitas Rav Yehuda, according to Shitas Beit Shammai, the wall in the water is going to be from the bottom of the pit all the way up and even slightly above the water, meaning that the wall is going to create full separation between the waters on one side of the chatzir and the other side of the chatzir. That is what Beit Shammai meant according to Rabbi Yehuda. V'su hadam Rabbi Yehuda l'mal l'mal l'min amayim. Now let's go and try to understand the shita of Beit Shammai according to Rabbi Yehuda, where the wall is lamala min amayim. It has to be above, it can be, not it has to, it can even be above the surface area of the water. The Gemara says, Maishan lamala mamish, delo, da arive maya. Lamala min amayim nami harive maya. So the Gemara says, so here, according to Beis Hillel, clearly, the purpose of the wall is not to separate the water, because the wall is in, the wall is just above the water. So once the wall could be just above the water, why can't the wall also be even higher than that? Meaning, what difference does it make where within the airspace of the pit this wall is going to lie if the wall's not separating the water? So then just put the wall anywhere within the pit. So Amar Lei Lo Shmi Alach Had Ni Yaakov Kar Chaynai Tzarech Shishka Rosh Kanim B'Mayim Tefach. So the Gemara says again over here in terms of clarification. So we have a tradition that according to Beis Hillel, as explained by Rav Yehuda, so the wall, it's not enough for the wall to just be touching the surface area of the water. It actually has to go down and submerge itself a tefach within the water. Okay, how does that help? So you look at Rashi right alongside where we are in the Gemara. Shishka Rosh Yakanim, Hatachtonim of Apligi. And now Rashi says, now we understand. This is all according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now we understand the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The Beis Shammai ba mechitza hamafsekes ad hatahom. So according to Beis Shammai, what's the purpose of the wall? It's very simple. According to Beis Shammai, separate the waters. That's why the wall has to go all the way down to the bottom of the pit, and the wall has to come up all the way to the top of the water, even going slightly above the water. So that's Beis Shammai. What about Beis Hillel? Rashi explains, Beis Hillel bau heker mechitza. The purpose of the wall over here is just simply as a heker. But heker only works if some of the wall is actually submerged in the water. If the wall is just hanging above the water, that's not a heker. A heker means that it's there to clearly demarcate this side of the well is mine, that side of the well is yours. So at least for heker purposes, the bottom of the wall has to submerge itself just slightly, a tefach, into the water itself. Good. So the Gemara says, okay, so far we have Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, Machlokas, Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda, how to understand Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says, there's another shita to account for. And the Gemara says, and where does this one belong? Ve'ela had the Amar Rav Yehuda, Kore Arba, Materas Bechorva. So the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rav Yehuda, let's say you have a beam, a board, that is four tfachim wide. So that'll be Mater Bechorva, that will allow travel in a chorva, a separation of the chorva. Rashi over here says, chorva, by the way, a dilapidated house, which we described already numerous times in Amasechta. And what I can now do is I can carry underneath the beam, meaning the chorva itself does not have walls, but the beam itself now is going to create walls. How is the beam going to create walls? Using a principle that we've gone over a number of times, and that's pitikra yorid v'sosein, that the edge of the beam is going to go down and create legal walls, halachic walls, on the two sides of the beam. This is what's called pitikra yorid v'sosein. Rashi over here on the bottom goes and explains that we're only going to say pitikra yorid v'sosein if it's jutting off the edge of a roof where the roof is minimally four tefachim. That's why this beam has to be four tefachim. Otherwise, we can't employ the principle of pitikra yorid v'sosein. So the Gemara says that Rav Yehuda allows it b'chorva. And Rav Nachman, Amar Rava Baravua, Kore, Dalid, Kore, Arbaz, we are now on the top of Pevavim and Beis, Materis B'mayim, so Ha Ka'azol Dali Le'idach Yisa, Umayse. So, and I'm sorry, before I get to the Gemara's question, and the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rav Nachman, that if I have this beam, so that would also work vis-a-vis a water. Meaning, we have now spent a good amount of time discussing how there has to be a wall within the interior of the pit. Placement of the wall, subject to a debate that we just went over. But over here now, the Gemara introduces us to an opinion that says that even if I just have a beam of Fort Fachim hovering over the pit and operating through the principle of Pitikra Yod Vesosim, so the walls are now going to come down. And the Gemara says, I'm just not understanding. Who is he following like? And on top of that, the Gemara says, look, when you put your well into the pit, there's no wall separating the two sides, so isn't the well going to slide over to the other side? That's the Gemara's question. Isn't your bucket going to go to the other side? So the Gemara says, yeah, but look, here's what the Chachamim did. So they tested and tested, and they found that when you're dropping a bucket into a pit of stationary water, so yeah, the bucket may move around a little bit, but now it's going to go side to side just a little bit, but no more than four tefachim. So the beam that you put underneath the, that you put over the well, so that's going to ensure that your bucket's not going to slide over to the other side. So the Gemara says, that's great, but that's not a full solution. So the Gemara says, tachas kore mia ha arve maya. So the Gemara says, yeah, but directly under the beam, so you have mixed water. And so your bucket's going to slide to the area directly under the beam, and isn't that a problem? So ela mishum dekal hu shekilu chachamim b'mayim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but remember now that basically what the beam is doing is it's creating halachic partitions. And even though they are suspended walls, but what do we know about suspended walls? So I'll tell you what we know about suspended walls: that if it's over water, the chachamim were makel. Kedabai minei, Rabbi Tavla meirav mechitza tuli amau shetati bechorva. And remember the discussion that we already had numerous times. Can a mechitza hamat, can the mechitza tuliya, a suspended wall? So does that help on dry land? And amrlei in mechitza tuliya materas ala b'mayim kalu shekilu chachamim b'mayim. And the answer is simply no. It doesn't. It doesn't work by dry land. The only time suspended walls work is only going to be by water, because water is so significant. It's just a necessity of life. So therefore, the Chachamim allow and gave an allowance only for suspended walls over water. So this idea now that a border for Tzfachim placed over the well, creating the walls using the principle of Pitikra Yorid V'Sosim, is in fact going to work as presented by Rav Nachman. But the Gemara wanted to know how exactly is that going to work. So the Chachamim were makel by suspended walls. But presumably all this would work only according to the Shita of Rav Huna. Rashi over here on the Amud Beis makes that point very clear. Meaning that you go back to our machlokus of Beit Shammai Beis Hillel, how to properly understand Beit Shammai Beis Hillel. So you remember that where is that wall going to be placed within the interior of the well? So Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda debated. That was the beginning of the sugya. Rav Huna says that it has to be placed in the interior, but it doesn't have to go down to the surface area of the water. It's enough as long as it's somewhere within the interior, even if it's in the top portion of the interior. Masha Enkin, Rav Yehuda says no. It has to be lower down in the interior, where at least the bottom of the wall is going to be a tefach into the water itself. So Rashi over here points out that this shita of Rav Nachman is necessarily following the shita of Rav Huna, not the shita of Rav Yehuda. Hanging walls are good. Okay. Continuing now in the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda, Lo Tehei Mechitza, Amar Rav Abba Bachana, Amar Rav Yochanan, Rav Yehuda B'shitas, Rav Yossi Amra. So now, in our Mishnah, we had the Shita of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, I don't need additional walls in the pit. By simple virtue of the fact that you have a wall that goes over the pit, that is sufficient. And now what the Gemara is going to do is try to create alignment between Tanaim. The Gemara does this all the time. And what the Gemara is going to attempt to do is put together the Shita of Rav Yehuda of our Mishnah here in Erevin and the Shita of Rav Yossi. What Shita of Rav Yossi? The Amar Mechitza Tuli Mateus Afilu B'Yabasha. I know that Rav Yossi Shita is that Mechitza Tuli is going to work even if water is not taken into consideration. How do I know that? Didnan? It's a Mishnah in Sukkah. The Mishnah in Sukkah says, "Hamishal shal defanus milamala limata bizman shekvoa min aretz kamal tefachim psula mimata lamala im gvoa yud tefachim kshera." So, walls that were rolling out, okay, the rollout tzach. We're here talking about rollout walls of the sukkah, and if the walls are being rolled downward, meaning that they were rolled up, and I'm rolling them downward. As long as they are within 3 tefachim of the ground, that's good. But if they're above 3 tefachim of the ground, that's no good because it's simply not a wall. In other words, right now it's a suspended wall. It's a hanging wall. The head of the goat can go underneath the wall. It's just simply not a kosher wall. That's according to the Tanakhama. And Rabbi Yossi, Amar Kishim Lamata Lamala, Asara Kach Milamala Lamata Asara. And Rabbi Yossi says, the walls, as long as the total height of the wall is 10 tefachim, so it doesn't matter where the wall is situated. The status of a wall is that it continually ascends, so good achis, a wall is going to descend as well. So even if the bottom of this suspended wall exists above 3 tefachim from the ground, that's fine, says Rav Yossi, because the wall continuously goes downward as well. Good. So this is Shitas Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says, so now, I think what we have now is a fair connection. Rav Yossi in that Mishnah in Sukkah is holding just like Rav Yehuda here in our Mishnah in Erevin. The Gemara says Velohi. The Gemara says, but not necessarily, because Lo Rav Yehuda Sava Lek Rav Yossi, Lo Rav Yossi Sava Lek Rav Yehuda. The Gemara says that the two positions are not necessarily connected one to the other. Rav Yehuda Lo Sava Lek Rav Yossi Ad Kan Lo Kamer Rav Yehuda Ela Be'eruve Chatzeros De Rabbanan. So Rav Yehuda being lenient over here, we're talking about Eruve Chatzeros. It's a Din De Rabbanan. Aval Sukkah Da Reis Olo. But not necessarily by Sukkah, which is a din d'araisa. And so it could very well be that Rav Yehuda would be machmir, like the sheet of the Tanakhama over there in Sukkah. V'lo Rav Yossi sevelak Rav Yehuda ad kan lo kamer Rav Yossi ala b'sukkah. Di iser aseihu aval Shabbos, di iser skilihi lo amar. So and we could also go in the other direction as well. Yes, it's true that Rav Yossi is maker when it comes to Sukkah. Sukkah is a mitzvah in the Torah, but mitzvah saseh. Bittul mitzvah saseh is serious, but not the same level of seriousness as the violation of Shabbos. Yes, it's true, Erevin and Chatzer are Dine de Rabbanan, but under the rubric, under the umbrella of, of Hilchos Shabbos. And so therefore, he may not feel so comfortable to be Mekel if ultimately what we're talking about is possibility of violating Yisur Shabbos. So it could very well be that Rav Yossi, who is a Mekel by Sukkah, may not necessarily be a Mekel when it comes to our topic over here of Chatzeros, and Eruve Chatzeros. Okay. V'im Tomar, I'll tell you what, we'll stop over here. V'im Tomar, we'll pick it up tomorrow in terms of continuing the discussion a little bit more. But in the meantime, however, let's quickly recap. We started with our Mishnah here on Pehei Amud Beis regarding placement of the Eruv. And to say it succinctly, Eruv Echatzeros is placed in a home within the Eruv, and Shitufa Mavos is placed in a Chatzer within the Mavoi. Good. That's the short of it, right? It gets more detailed in terms of distinguishing between different types of homes, residential versus non-residential homes. We learned in the Mishnah that if you are renting out the home, so the primary person responsible to contribute to the Eruv is you, the renter, but if the owner has a Tfisas Yad in the home, so then you, the renter, do not create restrictions. And a discussion to be had in the Gemara, what exactly is the Tfisas Yad? The mission that we did on the top of Peivav Amud Aleph teaches us the halachas of an unoccupied home and whether or not that creates restriction. Four opinions. The Gemara sides with the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, that if you go away for Shabbos, that is considered an unoccupied home, which does not create restriction. Even if you go to your daughter who lives in the same town, That means that you're not planning on coming back that Shabbos. Gemara makes a great observation. That's true by daughter, not by daughter-in-law. Okay, watch out for your daughter-in-law, says the Gemara. The Mishnah, the next Mishnah, our final discussion of the day, is that when I have a pit that exists between two chatzeros, and now each members of the chatzer want to draw from their side of the pit, what kind of wall is necessary in order to allow that to happen? In the Mishnah, machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, unclear exactly how to understand that machlokes, as we read in the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah also brought down a sheet to Rav Yehuda, says that you don't need any kind of wall within the pit. The wall of the chatzer that goes over the pit is sufficient. In the Gemara, Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda debate what exactly Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel require. Rav Huna being a more makel, meaning that the wall has to be in the interior of the pit, but it could be even on the top portion. Even the bottom of the wall is not even touching the surface area of the water. Rav Yehuda is a little bit more of a machmir. The wall has to be in the airspace of the pit, closer to the water. Actually, submerged within the water one tefach. As Rashi explains, according to Rav Yehuda, the purpose of the wall, according to Beis Shammai, is for heker reasons. And Beis Shammai's position also debated by both Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda exactly where the wall is to be placed according to Shitas Beis Shammai. And finally, on Pei Vavam and Beis, we try to put together the Shita of Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi. Rav Yehuda of our Mishnah, who doesn't require a wall whatsoever within the airspace of the pit, the wall that goes over the top is going to be sufficient. So sounds like our Rav Yehuda here in our Mishnah in Erevin is going just like the Shita of Rav Yossi in Sukkah, where Rav Yossi says that a hanging wall, suspended wall, is going to be good in terms of making for a kasher sukkah, even though the bottom of the wall is above 3 tefachim from the ground. The Gemara objects to necessarily putting these two shitas together. It could very well be that they simply are not in agreement with one another, differentiating the two cases.